Okay, well, good afternoon, everybody. Or yeah, good afternoon. It's a pleasure to see everybody here. I've had a calm couple weeks. I know all you have too, so was my attempt at humor. Good news.
No, but
All right.
we should, David, just congratulate you. I mean, that's, we can't let that, I mean, we've all probably done it individually, but collectively, bravo. Well done, David, and we're so pleased, and the fourth district is in good hands.
It is, but I'll be there soon and we'll change all that.
And Brad, I told Secretary Cespedes that, but despite my protests, they went ahead anyway. So,
Yeah. So this meeting is so welcome everybody. It's a pleasure to see everybody. I am hopeful that in the not too distant future we'll be able to meet again in person. But until then, this will do, and it's great to see everybody. So this meeting is open to the public, and we are recording. We are conducting our meeting virtually. Members of the public can watch the meeting via a listen-only video feed. Budget committee members and others who may be presenting or answering questions, if you could try to unmute yourself prior to speaking and then mute yourself after you're done speaking, that would help minimize background noise. And also, people that are listening only may not recognize your voice. That's why we ask you to identify yourselves. With that, Ms. Cowan, can you take roll?
Judge Rubin. You are, is it Justice Rubin now, or is it Judge Rubin still?
It's Judge or David is fine, but Judge will do just fine.
Okay, Judge Rubin.
Here.
Judge Mormon.
That long as you
Here.
haven't.
Justice Fujisaki. She did inform us she was not going to be here for the meeting. Justice Hill.
Here.
Judge Armendariz.
Here.
Judge Botke.
Here.
Judge Hopp. He let us know he was potentially going to be late. Mr. Yamasaki.
Yes, good afternoon. I'm present.
Thank you. And Ms. Hill.
Yes, I'm here.
Thank you. So we do have a quorum available.
Great. Outstanding. Thank you. So first order of business is minutes. And if we get a motion from the March 14, 2023 minutes, if you look at page 4, that'd be great.
Mormon moves to approve.
I'll second Hill.
All right. Mormon moves, Hill seconds. Do we have any further discussion or conversation? All right, seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Abstain? It passes. Ms. Cowan, have we received any public comment for this meeting?
We have received no public comment for the meeting.
All right, that does conclude the public comment portion of this meeting. All right, as you saw from your agenda, we have four action items that are coming to us from the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee. And let's start with item one. This is the recommendation from the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee to increase Santa Clara Superior Court's allocation from the civil assessment money to cover the capital obligation from some time ago. Presenting today, excuse me, presenting today is Judge Conklin and Ms. Tuck from the Judicial Council Budget Services. Go ahead.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon, folks. I'm sorry to be monopolizing your entire calendar today, but we'll try to make it efficient as usual. Item number one is just Judge Rubin just told us involves the Santa Clara debt obligation. I'm about to turn it over to Oksana, but I'll just give you a very brief path how we got here. This has gone through the Trial Court Budget Advisory Subcommittee, the Funding Methodology Subcommittee. Save for one abstention, it was unanimously approved after what I consider to be a very thorough vetting. It then went to the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee last week, went through the same process and was unanimously passed for your consideration. We have Rebecca with us today. She's my co-chair, and while she typically would present, obviously given her court's involvement in this, she's here to answer any questions you might have. Again, I'm going to turn over to Oksana in just a moment. David Yamasaki, your committee member, also has extensive experience with this and was very helpful in the past in answering questions, so we'll turn to him if necessary. Oksana, if you would not mind presenting the substance of this, thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you, Judge Conklin. Good afternoon. My name is Oksana Tak. I'm a senior analyst with Budget Services. This report is to assist the committee in considering a recommendation from the TIGBAC to increase Santa Clara's Superior Court debt service obligation amount funded from the civil assessment backfill funding to cover the full cost of the obligation. The recommendation of this adjustment is in response to the workload formula adjustment request process, ARP for short, that was submitted by the court. To provide some background, Santa Clara submitted an ARP in January of 2022, requesting that courts with debt service obligations intended to be funded with civil assessment revenue be adjusted due to the following: the Legislative and Judicial Council policy changes, the continued decline in civil assessment revenue, the decline or elimination of other revenue sources, and changes in trial court reserves. At the time of ARP submission, the workload formula included adjustments that account for net civil assessment revenue based on the most current fiscal year data. However, the process in which the workload formula utilizes civil assessment revenue and debt obligations has changed. Today, according to the 2022 Budget Act, which redirected the deposit of civil assessment revenue from the trial court trust fund to the general fund and included $110 million general fund to backfill civil assessment revenues, has resulted in a new methodology. This methodology, outlined on page 7, effectively excludes civil assessment from the workload formula and funds the debt obligations for courts that enter into these agreements with the intention to fund them using civil assessment backfill revenue up to a specified amount. Under this current process, of the four courts identified on page 8 with those specific debt obligations, Santa Clara is the only court that has a higher obligation amount than what is being covered by civil assessment backfill revenue. $2.5 million of Santa Clara's total amount obligation is being covered from the court's operational budget. During its March meeting, the TIGBAC's funding methodology subcommittee considered different options in addressing the ARP request. The subcommittee voted to move forward with an option that funds Santa Clara's debt obligation in full by increasing the amount of the civil assessment backfill, which is in line with their understanding of the original intent of addressing the remaining debt service obligations originally intended to be funded with civil assessment revenue. Earlier this month, TIGBAC concurred with the subcommittee's recommendations effective July 1st, 2023. For reference, the recommendation is presented on page 9 of your materials, and upon approval, the recommendation will be considered by the Judicial Council at its May business meeting. That concludes our presentation, and we're happy to take questions.
Oksana, thank you so much. And so I will obviously open it up for questions. But I just wanted to preface the continuation of this presentation with and give you a little bit of depth of our TIGBAC and FMS discussion. We approach this, as we do with all issues, from a statewide perspective. And though there might be some thought that this benefits an individual court, which it does, in the sense that it will relieve, justifiably, Santa Clara of a substantial debt obligation. It benefits the trial courts as a whole. It's a policy decision. It obviously getting down into the weeds of MOEs and civil assessments, I barely touch the top of those weeds. David's with us. I think David and Rebecca probably here, but I don't mean this as a criticism, from the growth of those weeds and perhaps can give you a little bit better background. But decisions were made based upon perceptions of civil assessments long ago. And I guess from my personal perspective, the civil obligations have, there's a sea change that I don't think was really anticipated that gives rise to this recommendation. This won't happen again. Not that it was a bad thing when it did happen, but given the change of civil assessments, they're not going to be used for this purpose anymore for very valid reasons. But this did happen. It happened for valid reasons, and FMS and TICBAC considered that. And again, from the statewide policy perspective, reached the decision after considering these four different recommendations that we're going to close the door on this, move forward. And our recommendation is to relieve Santa Clara of this obligation completely. That will affect all trial courts to a very slight degree, but many of our major budget decisions do just that. So I think as an introduction, I've probably said enough. David, Rebecca, I don't know if you want to add anything or obviously questions from these members.
Yeah, thank you, Judge Conklin and Judge Rubin, if I may. You know, there's been a lot of information that's been provided in the materials, and this is one of those that was has a lot of moving parts, and I think it might be helpful to have a little bit of context just to emphasize how things have changed since the original agreement was reached back in 2010. 2010, Santa Clara Court was drawing a net receipt of in excess of $9.5 million as a result of the civil assessment collections. The decision that was made to help facilitate the construction of their project in large part relied upon the belief that those funds would remain at least consistent going forward. It did not. As Judge Conklin mentioned earlier, and I think maybe Oksana touched on as well, changes in the amount of money the courts could now retain reduced dramatically from where they were at that time. It moved to 1%. I think we're now standing at 3% in terms of what monies we can hold. And that obviously had a very challenging effect on Santa Clara's ability to save the money to fulfill that obligation. But the project itself was an excellent project to go forward with because of all of the sources of revenue that continue to be in place. And one of them has to do with the county facility payment of $3.5 million that the county is obligated to provide in perpetuity, well beyond the time that the debt service payment is satisfied, which is somewhere in the area of 2040 something. I'm not exactly sure when it ends. But once that debt service is completed, that $3.5 million goes to the pot for the benefit of all. All facilities that require varying degrees of maintenance. The other thing that had happened is the changes in the way civil assessment is being distributed to the courts. It's not going directly to courts that collect the money, but it's going to all courts as a whole. And that has significantly changed the ability for this obligation to be met. I know that $2.5 million is a notable amount of money, but as Judge Conklin did mention, the distribution among all of the courts make it much more absorbable. This circumstances that have changed as it relates to court construction progress projects have been impacted immensely by drops in revenue. And it is absolutely exemplified by the fact that capital projects are not able to move forward without the infusion of additional resources from the state's general fund. So circumstances have changed dramatically. I realize that agreements were made previously, but the changes have really challenged Santa Clara's ability, in my view, to support this particular model, which I believe needs to be changed. We have spent the last 10 years making adjustments to decisions that were made earlier. And I think this is one of those situations where it gives us another opportunity to refine further and resolve this. I think Judge Conklin said closes the door on this last item that I think is appropriate. The monies obviously would go a long way in helping the court as well. I think we've been very much committed to ensuring access. That dollar amount, I'm confident it certainly would mean a lot for our court here, would go a long way to ensuring that access can be preserved in an efficient manner. I think that all of the information that's been contained really reflects the basis for the actions that were taken by the subcommittee, as well as the trial court budget advisory committee.
Justice Hill, I see you have your hand up as well.
I would just make a motion to approve the recommendation. I think this does demonstrate why we all have been working toward general funding for the branch, not only for the construction program, but for trial courts. We have a certainty of the funding, and this demonstrates why we need to continue pushing for that. And so with that in mind, I would move approval.
Right, we have a motion. Is there a second?
I would like to second the motion.
All right, Yamasaki seconds. Further discussion or comments?
Yeah, this is Hal Todd. I have finally joined the meeting after excusing my expert. I would just comment, or like to hear from Zlatko, I guess. This is all based on the assumption that last year's budget act with the $100 million going forward actually happens. Has there been any discussion about trimming that in light of state's budget deficit?
Judge Hopp, there hasn't been. Not to say that circumstances can't change, and I think we'd have bigger issues if we had to have significant budget reductions otherwise. But no, there has been no discussion. That was an agreement on an ongoing relief, not only for the individual on the civil assessment side and the high price of those, but also understanding that the branch needs to be backfilled. And that's been general policy lately, that if any of these fines and fees are impacted, that the branch is being backfilled for those.
All right. Thank you, Judge Moorman. I think you had your hand up.
Yes, two things. One, I just want to say expressly how much I agree with what Justice Hill just said. The situation really exemplifies why the reliance on fee revenue for our ongoing construction and facility needs was a precarious situation. Just a couple questions. The $4.031 million is an annual obligation, correct? I don't know who's answering questions, but maybe Oksana.
Rebecca, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Oksana.
That's okay, Rebecca.
It is an annual obligation.
So the recommendation, especially in light of what Zlatko just said, with regard to the stability of the backfill, this would be effective, assuming the council approves it, effective July 1, 2023, and going forward until the debt obligation is satisfied, correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's an
as would be the other three courts. They have that date ends as well. Some of them many years out. But
they're all different. Every date end is a little
right. They have different. Depending. Yeah.
Okay. I just think we should be clear about that. This is what the spirit of the recommendation is, and what the motion I think is.
Well, to Judge Moorman's point, excuse me, I'm getting over a cold. In effect, this is a $94 million transaction we're talking about. However you parse it, it's so significant. I think Judge Conklin and Mr. Yamasaki and Justice Hill have characterized it well. We learned a lot from this, I think, this particular transaction as a branch. as a branch family. We are a much different place, is my opinion, than we were 13 years ago in terms of our sophistication with and understanding of transactions generally in the branch and these types specifically. I think Judge Hopp's concerns are reasonable, which are one thing we've learned is when we're depending upon, you know, different types or creative types of funding, you know, the policy of the legislature thus far and the governor has been to backfill. If that were to change, we make no mistake, and we understand, we're going with our eyes open. This is a $94 million obligation we've taken on. And we're confident we're of course going to meet it, however we have to meet it. But this also reflects, at least to me, an evolution in the way we as a branch think, which is what we have here is, for whatever the intentions were, we're in a situation where one of our branch families, Santa Clara, is struggling to meet its obligation. That is actually having an impact to some extent on services there to Californians. And given the mobility in society, people go to Santa Clara, go to, you know, use other courts as well. And people in our communities use a Santa Clara court, so they may be struggling. And we've come together and we're deciding that for the good of the branch, we're taking this on. And that is a good, I think that's what we are struggling to do with having a unified branch, is that people in, you know, name it, Siskiyou are worried about people in Santa Clara, and people in Santa Clara are worried about people in San Diego and what have you, and that's the way it's supposed to work, and that's what this decision reflects. As Judge Conklin said, we've learned something from this. I think we've also learned the soundness of the decision-making process within the branch. We have a very good process for capital projects, and this kind of, I think, supports the strength of that particular decision-making process. So I think this is a reasonable way forward, and there are no more questions or comments. I'll just call the question.
Judge Rubin, may I speak for just a moment?
Sure you can, Ms. Fleming, go ahead.
So I just have a couple comments. I do want to say I appreciate David's comments on the notable amount of this. And about $30 million of it was addressed last year with the other three courts, it is still a significant impact to our services. And I think that is something that we as a branch are laser focused on. And so I appreciate that comment. I also want to acknowledge that the agreements that have been in place and that have changed over time and that we've attempted to try and get our hands around this with have been something that Santa Clara has prioritized. We have made every effort to make every single payment and just made our third payment of this year to try and, you know, keep up with everything. But so I want to acknowledge the fact that we recognize the gravity of this obligation. That being said, I particularly want to thank the Judicial Council staff, Zlatko's team in particular, for supporting us in creating a glide path to get to you today. Judge Rubin, in fact, you know, initiating the real estate subcommittee as well. You know, there was a void in our ability to be able to talk to the committees and to the council as a whole when we started seeing this issue. And the staff really did, you know, support us in trying to get that message out and pointed us directly to the subcommittee, which landed us eventually here today. So I appreciate all of that work and support. So with that, I'll turn it back over. But I just want to say that Santa Clara is very grateful just to be here today to talk with all of you.
Thank you, Ms. Fleming.
Can I just suggest that to the extent it's Justice Hill's motion, that it's the motion to adopt the recommendation on page 9, I think the recommendation should be have a word inserted. It's adopt a recommendation to approve an annual $2.5 million increase. Because right now it looks like a one-time only, if you read it strictly. in my opinion.
Justice Hill.
I'm certainly willing to do that. Just I want to make sure that that meets with all of the approval of everyone around the table making that recommendation.
Yeah, right. So, Mr. Yamasaki, you're the second. Do you agree?
I do agree. I think that clarifies the intent of the recommendation.
Very well. Thank you, Judge Mormon.
Right. And then the understanding is until this debt is satisfied, and when the debt is satisfied, then obviously it stops. All right.
And the 3.5 million that I think Mr. Yamasaki referenced that's coming from the county goes into our, I mean, I don't think it needs to be in the motion, but the county's going to pay it into quote unquote perpetuity. It's going into our, I'm not sure where, but the facilities fund or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Judge Warren, those, all the other revenue streams will continue as per the agreement and as per any of the county facility payments, like any other county that is making those kinds of contracts.
Okay, thank you.
With that, all right, with that, let's, any further discussion or should we vote? I think we should vote. All right, all those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Opposed? Abstain? All right, it passes. All right. So, our second item is the allocation adjustment for the Information Technology Office. Again, this is going to be Judge Conklin and Ms. Pettit.
Thanks all very much. I'll turn it over to Heather very quickly because she's obviously the one you want to hear from on this. This is a consideration again of TICBAC for the allocation for the IT data center and cloud services program for a new electronic courts of appeal record and transcripts program. This also comes from TICBAC, a unanimous approval to you to consider passing this on to the council. And so as not to confuse you any further, I turn it to Heather. Heather?
Great. Thank you all so much for allowing me to present this item. So I think the first most important thing to note on this, it is a net zero impact to the trial court trust fund. This is a two requests relating to what we call the Schedule C process, in which courts request services from the Judicial Council IT department that we fund in advance, and then they reimburse, pay us out. And so part of the Schedule C process is that we bill them. So the first request, specifically relating to the California Courts Technology Center, is actually the procurement of Microsoft licensing for the judicial branch. A couple of years ago, the state of California entered into an agreement with Microsoft for significantly reduced costs relating to the licensing that we all use. However, the request from the Department of Technology was that the Judicial Council operates as the vendor, as you will, for those particular licenses. So we work with the Department of Technology. So the courts request licenses from us. We work with the Department of Technology. Department of Technology bills us. Then we in turn bill the courts through the Schedule C process. This request is part of that. And so it's an over and above what we would, the original requested amount from the previous year. And I will let you know, hot off the presses, that we have had several courts now requesting new licensing for renewals this coming year. So we're going to be coming back through another request, you know, in the next round to do this process again for additional licensing. The great news is that this saves us a tremendous amount of money across the branch, but that is a net zero. So we do bill them back. The other item on the list is eCart, which is a program that is an enterprise program that the courts would be paying out of there. We have an allocation amount that we set forward, which was $200,000, that we would bill them back for the hosting services of this particular solution that was developed by Los Angeles Superior Court. Previously, this is an trial court appellate solution. Previously, the courts paid directly for this with a vendor. We have since taken over this program at a branch-wide level, and now are hosting it, managing it, and doing the implementation across the board. So this is, again, another Schedule C bill back model. We have it deployed to 35 courts. The goal is for next year to hopefully deploy it to all 58 courts and get all the courts of appeal on. It's been a very successful program. The great news of that is that we did have extra modernization money left over. So we are able to absorb the $200,000 this year, but we do want you to be familiar with this process because it's something that we will be doing on an annual basis going forward. And so ultimately, we will be coming to you going forward in the future state with all of our Schedule C processes so you know how much is the net zero whereby we do the initial payment, and then, of course, the courts get billed back into this process. So that is the request in a nutshell. Are there any questions for me?
Any questions for, excuse me, any questions for Ms. Pettit? And I see a hand up, Judge Hopp.
Oh, Judge Hopp, I think you're on mute.
Yeah, I realized after I put my hand up that I was muted, and then, of course, I can't get unmuted very fast because I'm just not technologically proficient. So I move that we adopt a recommendation. I would only add one comment. In case we're able to do this, we have a similar situation with licenses for Westlaw and Lexis, and I suggested ages ago, and it didn't go anywhere, that at least on the branch level, we negotiated instead of having 58 trial courts and how many courts of appeal negotiate their own licenses, because I vaguely recall that the Westlaw and Lexis wanted to be really secretive about how much they were charging different people. And my guess is that that means that collectively we're overpaying for those things. Anyway, I will get off my soapbox now.
Thank you, Judge Hopp. You know, the great thing is you actually have the co-chair of the technology committee on here who might be able to make a recommendation to JCIT to move forward with that. So I think that's a great idea.
I'd be happy to talk to you offline, Hal.
Excellent.
So diplomatic. Good news. All right. So we have a motion.
This is Judge Mormon. I move approval of both recommendations set forth on page 182 of our materials.
Outstanding. All right. We have a motion and a second.
I'll second, Phil.
Oh, okay. And Justice Hill would like to second as well. So that's good. We'll do that.
I'm sorry.
So where was I? Oh, yes. Any further discussion? Any further discussion? Now, hearing none. All right. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Abstain? Passes. All right. Item three is going to be the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee recommendation on the Elder Abuse Program Reimbursement and Allocation Adjustment. We're going to turn this over to Judge Conklin and Ms. Lane from Judicial Council Budget Services.
Judge Rubin, thanks so much. You took my introduction. That's exactly what you're considering today. And just to expedite matters, I'll turn it right over to Rose to give you the substance of this recommendation as well. Thank you, Rose.
Great. Thank you, Judge Conklin. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Rose Lane, and I'm a Senior Budget Analyst with Budget Services. So this report is to assist the committee in considering a recommendation from the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee to adjust the current year trial court trust fund allocation amount for elder abuse program reimbursements to the trial courts. So to provide some background, the 2000 Budget Act provided $1.2 million to address court workload pursuant to Assembly Bill 59, which authorized elders and dependent adults to seek emergency protective orders to protect them from non-relative cohabitants for non-financially related abuses. AB 59 also created a new protective order for elder and dependent abuse, which included financial abuse. Since 2001 to 2002 fiscal year, courts have submitted reimbursement requests each quarter to the Judicial Council for each elder and dependent abuse filing. While there have been some ups and downs in this allocation, more recently, the number of protective orders continue to increase. So based on available data and projections, today's request is for an increase of $550,000 to the existing allocation of $650,000 for a total of $1.2 million in the 22-23 fiscal year. The recommendation for this increase is included on page 183 of your materials. And upon approval, the recommendation will be considered by the Judicial Council at its May business meeting. So that concludes our report, and Budget Services is happy to take any questions you have.
All right. Rose, thank you. Any questions for Ms. Lane or Judge Conklin? All right. Is there a motion?
Yamasaki moves approval of the recommendation.
All right, Yamasaki. And Ms. Hill, were you trying to second?
Thank you.
Or move. All right, Yamasaki moves. Hill seconds. All right, is there further discussion? All right, seeing none and no questions, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Abstain? All right, motion passes. Outstanding. Our last business item, or our last item in this group of four, is the Firearms Relinquishment Grant Program recommendations coming from TICVAC and the Family Law Advisory Committee. I'm going to turn this over to, if you guessed Judge Conklin, you'd be right, and Mr. Tanaka and Ms. Ho.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that, and I'll turn it immediately over to those two. This is the fourth item on your agenda. It is not the least important. It's equally important, but I think pretty straightforward, so as not to confuse things. Greg or Francis, I'm not sure who wants to take this.
I have the pleasure of taking this one, Judge Conklin. Thank you.
Thanks, Francis.
Good afternoon. So before you today is a recommendation to provide funding to Orange Superior Court to create a new firearm relinquishment program. This is the second cycle of this program. Last November, this group approved allocating seven other superior courts in cycle one to create a new or expanded firearm relinquishment program. Before going into the recommendation for Orange, we wanted to give you a brief update on the status of the programs from cycle one. In January of this year, the council approved the recommendation to award the seven courts with a total of approximately $18.5 million. The council has fully executed the interbranch agreements with all of the Cycle 1 grantee courts, and those courts are currently in the process of securing MOUs with their law enforcement partners. During Cycle 1, we did hear from some courts that a significant challenge that they faced in submitting an application was securing a law enforcement partner, which is something that is required under the enabling legislation. Therefore, the goal of opening a second cycle was to provide courts with more time to work with their local agencies, as well as to distribute the remaining $17.5 million in unallocated funds. So this January, all courts were invited again to apply for cycle two. We hosted another informational webinar for potential applicants and helped to facilitate contact between cycle one applicants and new courts that were interested in applying. Despite our efforts, we only received two applications from San Francisco Superior Court and Orange Superior Court. San Francisco was granted an award in cycle one. So during their cycle two request, they asked for additional funding to bring on more law enforcement partners. However, during the review process, San Francisco withdrew their application after determining that their cycle one allocation would be sufficient. So before you today is a recommendation to allocate approximately $1.5 million to Orange Superior Court to create a new firearm relinquishment program to address non-compliance in domestic violence restraining order cases. The court would partner with the Anaheim Police Department and also use grant funds for public and stakeholder education and outreach. They would also contract with a technology consultant to develop an effective strategy for alerting law enforcement of non-compliance. In the event that any of the approved grantees from both cycles cannot spend the full amount of their awards, the recommendation also includes a provision that would authorize the Family and Juvenile Law Advisory Committee to reallocate those unspent funds to any of the grantee courts, subject to the same criteria used during the application process. The Family and Juvenile Law Advisory Committee will also continue to assess and explore options to allocate the remaining $15.9 million, including the possibility of providing additional funding to grantee courts and their partners to expand their programs over the next 2 years. This funding must be used by June 30th, 2025. Given the time needed to implement a new program, in addition to the challenges with one-time funding, we believe that opening another application process would not be practicable. That concludes our presentation, and I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
Francis, thanks so much. Greg, like me, you were brilliant as well, so appreciate that. I'll turn it back to Judge Rubin.
I like everyone's optimism. All right, any questions for Judge Conklin, Mr. Tanaka, or Ms. Ho? All right, seeing none, is there a motion?
Judge Botke moves to approve.
All right, motion by Bakke. Is there a second?
Mormon seconds.
Mormon seconds. All right, we have a motion by Bakke, a second by Mormon. Any further discussion? All right, seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Opposed? Abstain?
Yes, right, Yamasaki abstains on this item. From Orange.
Oh, well, there you go. All right, Yamasaki is abstaining and has actually played no part in the discussion or deliberations regarding this matter. With that, then motion passes. All right. Our next meeting is May 17, 2023. And let me ask before we adjourn if there's anything for the good of the order.
On behalf of TICBAC, I just want to thank everybody very much for their consideration of our issues. Much appreciated.
It's a pleasure to be working with you and the staff that support you, Judge Conklin. And thanks. As always, it's been a great relationship.
And Judge Rubin, I might just, to the unsung folks in IT who always make these meetings go off so well, they really appreciate their support. They do a lot behind the scenes, and it's time they get a little bit of a shout out for us.
That's great, and that's true, and they change my name on the fly, and they're outstanding. And we should also thank, as always, our John Wardlaw and Zlocko and Ms. Cowan and everybody at Budget Services for all the support we get from the staff that support the budget committee. So thank them. And Mr. Wardlaw, I had to give up his seat here because I couldn't get my laptop to fire up. So he even sacrifices for us, so, or me anyway. So great. With that, then we will see everybody Wednesday, May 17, 2023. And we are in adjournment. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Good weekend.